Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 23rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we inch a day closer to Super Bowl 54. We'll talk about that in our first segment today with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. We'll talk Super Bowl, as I just mentioned. We'll also talk some college basketball during that segment with Brad. Then in the second half of today's show, a new guest joins the program, a new writer and contributor over at bangthebook.com. That is John Ryan from John Ryan Sports. We'll get some NBA content on the show today. We have not talked much NBA. I apologize for that. We'll start working that in a little bit more here as we go forward. But we'll talk some NBA with John, talk about what works for him, how he handicaps the association. Then we'll finish up with some thoughts on some Big East college basketball here for this weekend. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. As the prop catalogs get released from the offshore sports books, we'll talk a lot about those over the next 10 days or so here in advance of the Super Bowl. We'll have a lot of NFL content coming your way next week. But in the meantime, we've got lots of stuff in college basketball, the NBA, daily NHL when that returns, all the NHL now on the All-Star break. So we'll have a lot more NHL coming your way next week. Situational betting articles, got a UFC preview up for this weekend. NASCAR's not that far away. Great golf event this weekend at Torrey Pines. We got James Mazzola's preview of that. Always something going on over at bangthebook.com, so head on over there. Make sure that you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Couple guests on the program here today, and we start with professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, brother?
Man, it's going well. How you doing on this fine Thursday?
Very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. And, well, I guess let's go ahead and talk about Super Bowl 54 here, unless you've got a game of the year on the Pro Bowl that you want to talk about first.
No, I do not have that. So no Pro Bowl talk for me. Although, I mean, there has been, since they changed the rules up a little bit more value on the under in recent years. But certainly no big play for me on that one, buddy. I won't even watch it.
Yeah, neither will I. All right, so let's talk Super Bowl 54 here again. The 49ers and the Chiefs, if you don't know that by now, I don't know where you've been for the last 5 days, but we've got Kansas City here, the smallest of favorites at most places, a 1-point favorite, a little bit of extra juice on the Kansas City side in the offshore market. Of course, the publicly tuned shops, Bovada and MyBookie, 1.5 with juice or -2. I imagine the split looks pretty similar out there, Brad, between, you know, the books that cater to a little bit more sharp action and some of the more squarer books that are out there in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like most are dealing, you know, 1 and 54. That's pretty much consensus. You know, a couple of the square books are, you know, are dealing 54.5 on the total. That seems to be probably the squarest pick of the Super Bowl, at least so far in the first 4 or 5 days of betting. You know, a lot of money on the over, whether it be sharper money real early, and then the pros are going to want to bet scoring after both the AFC and NFC championship games go over the total. But it's been pretty consistent, and I'll be perfectly frank with you, in the next, you know, 7 to 10 days, I don't expect to see too much line movement, other than maybe we'll see that the total continue to creep up a little bit. But, you know, looking at it here, as my cat yells at me,
who does the cat like in the game?
He didn't like me talking about the total. I mean, maybe he likes the over. Jeez. looking at it here, I don't expect to see too much line movement. I'd be intrigued to think what you think on that.
Yeah, I don't really see a whole lot of line movement either. The one thing that's kind of interesting to me, you know, I grabbed Kansas City to pick them early on in the process at -110. Figured that line would go up a little bit. Kind of wanted that position so I could see what I wanted to do with the game. The more I kind of sit here and think about this, and I know we had a little bit of an initial move towards the Kansas City side, it almost feels to me like San Francisco will be a little bit of the sharper pick in this game. I think there will be two-way action both ways, but I think San Francisco may end up being a little bit of a sharper side. You agree with that?
I do. Or at least it'll be interesting to see, because I think a lot of the old school guys that are going to look at, you know, how do teams do with the better defense in the Super Bowl? Very strong for the teams with the better defense. How do teams do with the better run game in the Super Bowl? Very good for the teams with the better run game. And certainly San Francisco checks the box on each of those. So, yeah, from what I'm gathering so far, I do think San Francisco will probably end up being the sharper of the two sides. But let's not beat around the bush. The sharpest thing to do with Super Bowl betting is prop betting. That's going to be where I think, you know, at least the guy, not necessarily the betting syndicates, because you can't get, you know, $500,000 down on a Super Bowl prop, but the guys that do it professionally that are betting $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000 a game, they're going to attack the props more than anything, more than the side or total.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, this is the biggest game of the NFL season, as we all know. I mean, there's not much value in a line like this. There just generally isn't. It's going to be one of the sharpest numbers of the year, not just from the open, but also with the influx of money on a game like this. That shapes the market, and that really puts it in a position where, you know, as you said, I don't think this line moves very much at all. I think maybe there's an outside chance, as you kind of read between the lines a little bit, that perhaps you get San Francisco minus one at some point if that becomes a sharp enough side. I don't see Kansas City going up that much higher, because they even went up to 1.5 and 2, and it came back down a little bit. So the books kind of know that they probably don't need to go up on Kansas City. I think at this point, it's only one-way movement on San Francisco if we get anything on the side. And it's South Florida. I mean, it's going to rain at some point. Whether it rains during the game or it rains before the game, we don't know, but it's going to rain. So the total probably does come back down a little bit, even though a lot of public money will be on the over. But if you're sitting here waiting for a price on this game, waiting for something on the side, something on the total, you're probably not going to get it.
No, I just don't think you are. So, I mean, you can, you know, do with that with what you please. And obviously, we're not anywhere near key numbers here. So it's not like you're missing out too much, you know, if you're waiting or whatnot. So, yeah, I think both teams, the number is fair for me. Now, I'll go back to you originally bet Kansas City a pick 'em. So did I. I actually did, you know, took the AFC over the NFC and pick them at that point. But, you know, it really depends. I mean, a couple of factors, you know, that you know, need, or at least questions that need to be answered is, I think, I'll say this, I think the number one factor, and whatever your answer is, would probably go a long way in who you're going to bet, is Jimmy G. I think there is a major question mark on him. I'm not saying that he's below average. I'm not even saying he's average. In fact, generally speaking, I think he's an above average quarterback, maybe good quarterback, but the fact of the matter is, for me, limited playoff experience and hasn't been asked to do too much. And if it's a close game and he's got to go score for score with Patrick Mahomes, who we do have answers on in his relatively short career already in the playoffs, I mean, however you think Jimmy G's going to fare in that scenario is probably, to me, the number one factor of who you're going to bet in this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing, you know, and as we sort of start to transition over to the prop side of things a little bit, I know we might be a little bit touch and go with your segment next week because of some prior commitments that you have, but that's the thing. As you start looking at game flow for this, you know, Kansas City's probably going to adopt a very similar game plan to what they did against Tennessee. 9-man box, single high safety, let your corners play on an island, force the quarterback to beat you.
Yeah.
Does Kyle Shanahan, in the 2 weeks of prep time, figure out the weaknesses of that Chiefs defensive scheme, of flooding the box, of playing single high safety? Does he let Jimmy G try to throw this thing early on in the game? If he doesn't, we're talking about Garoppolo having 8 pass attempts against Green Bay, the bye week. You know, now he's in the biggest game of his life. How sharp can he be? You know, does Shanahan... this game, if he does that soften up the Kansas City defense? If he doesn't, what happens if this is close? So from a prop standpoint, this may be the hardest Super Bowl that we've had, because Kansas City's got all these flashy, high-flying skill position guys. Does San Francisco run 75 plays in this game to Kansas City's, you know, 45 or 50? Can you take overs at that point in time? I think it's going to be really tough to try and ascertain what the game flow is here.
Excellent point on your behalf. And what's been a little bit easier in the prop market, in the last several Super Bowls, is you've had so many data points when you're analyzing how New England handles a Super Bowl. That's been the beauty of having the Patriots in each and every year. You got an idea of how to price it. And we don't know how these guys are going to necessarily get coach in this game, Andy Reid and or Kyle Shanahan in this instance. And maybe I'm going way back here. I'm going to date myself. But maybe it's a very similar game plan, since offensively you look at the numbers at least coming in the postseason into the Super Bowl, very similar. I'm guessing maybe that they do something San Francisco like what the Giants did to the Bills way back when. Controlling the clock, the best defense against Kansas City is just keeping them off the field, period. Maybe we see something like that where the Giants had a time of possession of like 41-19 in that game. I could easily see that being the case. And if Kansas City's only going to be on the field for, like you mentioned, 45 plays, going to be awfully tough to cash a lot of individual prop plays for them, even though that they've been super explosive. So I agree with you. Player props, I don't think personally, I mean, it all depends on what prices are, but I don't see myself having as many Super Bowl player props as what I've had in the past. I'll probably go more game specific, for second half outscore first half type of stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's probably the way I'll look at it too. Also, I'll look at a lot of individual defensive player overs, particularly on the Kansas City side, because if San Francisco controls the clock here in this game, does run smart. A lot of plays. The safeties, guys like Sorensen, are going to have a lot of tackles. The corners are going to have to help in the run game. Linebackers are going to get lots of tackle opportunities. And that is something I've had great success with in previous Super Bowls, is looking at some of those tackle over props, some of the sack over props, stuff like that. And the thing that's really interesting about this game is I think both of these offensive lines are very, very good. So Kansas City may be able to play something of a ball control offense without the running game, because Mahomes may just be protected. And as we know, he can evade the rush. San Francisco, with that great four-man pressure, do they get there? And if they don't get there, how does the back seven hold up? So this is a challenge, man. It really truly is. And you've got two contrasting styles. You kind of wonder which one of those is going to win out. And also, you've got two exceptional head coaches here. I love Kyle Shanahan. Everybody knows that. Andy Reid, while he doesn't have a Super Bowl, I mean, the guy's been very, very successful. We know how well prepared he is off of extra prep time with that bye week here. Tough game, tough handicap, tough prop handicap. Got to be real, real smart with this year's selection of bets.
Yeah, you do. And be careful. Obviously when you're lining up, because I think there is some variance here to which one will weigh out. You always got to be careful of the old bankroll and lining up, four or five bets. If one happens to go wrong, it usually makes those other four or five bets, negative EV. So this is the type of Super Bowl where I'm not necessarily lining up a lot of things, because I'm not saying you can't have a strong, opinion on whether it be San Francisco or KC. I just don't see it. And I don't see, a lot of public bias on either of the two where you can, be a true contrarian here and line up against the public. Just not seeing it. One thing I do want to highlight what you said with the tackles and individual defensive players. Public wants to bet offense, obviously, when it comes to individual player props, quarterbacks to start off with, and probably wide receivers next and running backs. They don't necessarily attack, defensive players. And I think that'd be a really smart thing to do. So tip of the cap to you.
Well, and again, think about it. How does Kansas City win this game? Well, Mahomes has got to be really good. They're not going to run the football. So Mahomes has to be efficient, probably throw for a lot of yards, probably not get sacked a whole lot. And then also you have to isolate, is it Watkins like it was in the AFC Championship game?
Yep.
Is it Kelsey? Is it Tyreek Hill? Is it Damian Williams as a receiver, which I think is something that I'm going to take a very long look at, in particular with that San Francisco pass rush. Williams is kind of that safety valve, that quick dump-off guy. You start to look at something like that. If San Francisco is going to win this game, how much of it is because of Jimmy G? They could win this game, and Garoppolo could have an awful stat line, or at a minimum, a very low-volume stat line. But everyone's going to look at guys like Mostert. So maybe it's Matt Breida. Maybe it's Tevin Coleman if he's able to play. Maybe it's something different, some fullback runs, some fullback screens, crazy stuff that Shanahan likes to throw out there. you know, you got to think of this creatively too.
You do. What's tough is both teams are so versatile on both offenses that there really isn't a significant go-to guy. I would say this, I mean, just from past experience with so much reliance on the quarterback, I have to think, I mean, kudos to San Francisco and just run, line up and run like they did against Green Bay. You know, if they can win a Super Bowl like that, I'll certainly, again, tip the cap to them. We just haven't seen a Super Bowl one like that, you know, too often. I know Brady didn't have a great, you know, statistical Super Bowl a year ago, and it was very defensive oriented. But I mean, when pretty much since the Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer type Super Bowls in the early part of the century, I mean, it usually takes a pretty good effort out of your quarterback to get over the top here. And when you got Patrick Mahomes on the other side, I have to think when it's all said and done, Jimmy G's going to be a little bit more usage rate, more than 6 out of 8 like he was in the NFC Championship game.
At least I'll say this here, as we transition over to college basketball, that this is probably the best matchup we could have gotten. You know, I mean, I guess you could certainly say Baltimore, but you know, that'd be a run fest both ways, probably. You know, Lamar Jackson evading the rush. Again, it would still be a very good game, but from a watchability standpoint, from an intrigue standpoint, these two teams do things so differently. The contrast of styles, I think, makes for a really, really good Super Bowl, and God knows it can't be worse than last year's game.
I didn't mind last year's game, so because I had a lot of like Todd Gurley under, and I like the Patriots, and I didn't mind it. So I know people like offense and whatnot, but I totally agree with you. I mean, this is to me one of the more intriguing Super Bowl matchups we've had, at least in recent memory. And I'll throw this out to you, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised that this is something we see maybe another time or two, at least. I mean, because you got the best, in my opinion, young coach in the game in Shanahan, and obviously you got the best quarterback in the league, hopefully for the next 10 years, in Patrick Mahomes. So wouldn't be a bit surprised we see this matchup another time or two.
Yeah, that would definitely be interesting. And something else that's interesting here, and this will be the last point we make here, actually. It's something I just thought about, something I talked about yesterday on the show a little bit. I know that you've mentioned before, you know, some of the soft numbers that have been out there in New Jersey. And obviously, Kansas City's probably going to be -3 in Iowa. San Francisco might be a slight favorite up in Reno, stuff like that. But with legalization, you know, really across the country now, and there's what, I think 20 states or something open for betting here on this, and some that are hoping to actually be open for betting on the Super Bowl by the time this game rolls around. I mean, this is the first, you know, large scale U.S. betting Super Bowl. You know, last year we had New Jersey, we had Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and you know, a couple of other states here and there, but this year we got a lot of them, and that's going to be interesting to see too. It's going to be interesting to see how the envelope gets pushed from a prop standpoint in some of these states, what changes may be adopted in Nevada for prop betting, what they're able to do and get approval for, the different lines that are out there in different states. That's an interesting little side note to this game too, that I hope gets a lot of national coverage and a lot of national run in the lead up to the game.
Excellent point. And, you know, some more articles are coming out on how some of these individual states have handled this football season so far. And I got to be honest with you, Adam, I don't know. I got to start questioning myself. What am I doing here in the state of Nevada? I still think it's, you know, if you want to be a sports bettor, I still think it's the best option. Jersey's, you know, obviously gaining momentum big time in that. But when I see, like, I was reading an article that in the state of Oregon for the Oregon-Auburn game, which was basically Auburn right around a field goal favorite, they were dealing at some points prior to kickoff, Oregon -3, -4-ish. Yeah, I mean, obviously you got the money, you can, you know, travel around. It'll be really interesting if we get to, like, 35, 40 states with legalization. I mean, it might be in your best interest. You want to do this professionally just to, you know, rent and get a car, hopefully with good gas mileage, drive around and get the best of the numbers that way.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a lot of opportunities, especially if you live in a place that's got a lot of border states. You know, for me here in Ohio, Michigan's on the move. Indiana's already got it. Kentucky's not that far away. I mean, I don't know how Kentucky doesn't have it already with all the horse racing that they have. Pennsylvania's got it. West Virginia's got it. Yeah, if you're able to just kind of be almost like a betting nomad and just sort of rack up a bunch of miles on a car. Maybe you do get the opportunity, you know, at times to really take advantage of some of the numbers that are out there. And again, we will see some discrepancies. And just imagine what this thing would look like one of these years if the Giants or the Jets are in the Super Bowl. You know, you've got one coast with one thing, you've got the other coast with another thing. That would be really fascinating, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, because California looks like they're nearing here probably sometime this year or next year. And to have like a 49ers, you know, Jets type of thing, I mean, obviously the chances of that happening are slim to none. But still, to have that East Coast, West Coast dynamic with legalized states, I got to think you see some discrepancies of 2-3 points differences. And to be honest with you, in a game like the Super Bowl, that would be where the value is at. If you're looking to bet side or total, again, I still say the true value in this market is in the props. But even then, I mean, shopping around, I mean, you can get differences in passing yards of 10, 15, 20 yards. Obviously, a tremendous amount of value there as well.
Yeah, I mean, even the Steelers or the Eagles, you know, if the Eagles got back to the Super Bowl, you know, something like that. I mean, it would be just – and again, I mean, as somebody who, you know, studies and follows this industry very closely with, you know, the line of work that I'm in, it is something that does interest me quite a bit to see these price discrepancies. And like you said, the prop discrepancies even, you know, occasional chances at middles with some of these things. You may have a 20-yard middle on passing yards prop or something like
you
that.
You still even get that here in the state of Nevada, even after we've been around for all that. You still get that. I mean, it gets gobbled up pretty quickly, but you still get that to this day.
Right. Yeah. And again, I mean, that's the way to attack this, you know, try to find plus EV bets, because I can tell you that it's hard to call the side in total for the Super Bowl a plus EV position, because that line just absolutely the sharpest of the season here, to say the least. Like I said, hopefully we can get Brad back on the show again next week. I know he's got a lot of stuff going on. We'll try to get another segment with him, get some of those prop bets out there that we've actually played out there for our listeners on the show. But we transition over to college basketball for a few minutes here, and, you know, it's business as usual. You know, we got things kind of changing, the narrative being changed a little bit in the Big Ten with some more away teams actually getting to the window here this week. But overall, it's just kind of, you know, the regular grueling process of betting college basketball and handicapping 50, 60, up to 140 games a day.
Yeah, and if you're wondering – been back in Big Ten home teams all year and you've been cashing, you wonder what the hell happened the last couple of nights backing those home teams. You can thank me for it, because I just had to go out there on Twitter and tweet out how strong the Big Ten home teams have been. And the reason I did is, you know, if you looked at the last 10 games, and again, I tweeted this out on Tuesday prior to everything that's happened the last couple of nights, it was just as strong the last 10 games as it was the first 40 games of the trend backing Big Ten home teams in conference play. But obviously that's completely changed. So you can thank old Brad Powers for tweeting that out. I guess he wanted to get some more hate thrown his way on Twitter, I guess. Maybe someday he'll learn his lesson on that regard. But you mentioned it. It's no different than any other. I mean, it's a grind. I mean, you can't overreact to the wins. You can't overreact to the losses, especially when you got to do it on a night in and night out basis, and you're dealing with 40, 50 games a night. So never get too high, never get too low. I mean, same as usual.
Yeah, pretty much. And again, I mean, that Big Ten thing, you know, when there's some sort of massive outlier like that, the books adjust. And when it's a major conference like the Big Ten, they're going to start adding a little bit more home court advantage into the line. They're going to start kind of shading things a little bit. And also, I mean, look, it was probably an unsustainable trend, because the Big Ten's got a lot of good teams. Eventually, road teams are just going to perform better. So if you do catch on something, and Kyle Hunter's talked about this a lot on our Monday segments, if you've got a team that is not covering against a team that's covering a lot, the team that's not covering tends to do pretty well in those matchups, because, again, that line winds up getting a little bit inflated. You get regression to the mean, stuff like that. You want to try to pay attention to as much of that as you can in college basketball.
You do. Now, I'm going to push back a little bit. I didn't think you were paying much of a premium on these Big Ten home teams. At least that's not what I saw, even into this week. So I didn't think it was a major premium, like you're paying an extra point or so. And to me, some of it made sense why the home teams were winning at an historic rate, because you mentioned, hey, there's a lot of good teams, But I looked at it a different way. Hey, there's no great team, and great teams can go on the road in conference play and get a road win. Where, I mean, if you looked at the difference between the second best team in the Big Ten and maybe the 11th or 12th best team, what's that power ratings difference this year? 3-4 points. So I think with a lot of good teams and a lot of parity in that league and nobody great, no one was really able to overcome that. Now that's changed a little bit, obviously, in the last couple nights. But to me, the trend, at least for this season, at least at the start, made some sense to me. And I didn't see much of a premium. And I don't think you're paying huge premiums in college basketball until about starting this weekend is when you start are going to pay some premiums. Why? Because there's no football to bet anymore. And all those people have been betting football for the last 4 or 5 months. Finally are starting to transition over into basketball.
No, that's an excellent point. And I guess I'll go ahead and pat myself on the back for a second here before we talk about this weekend some more. One of the things I mentioned in my situational article over at bangthebook.com is really low major conferences. When these teams step up and play their chief competition, you know, the teams that they may be fighting for that auto berth for the NCAA tournament with, it's a big game for them. Those are spots those teams really get up for. Look at Hartford last night. Again, we're going very, very under the radar here in the America East, but Hartford played Vermont and then plays Albany this weekend, two of the better teams in that conference. In between, they played UMBC. Not a team that you're going to get up for, not a team that you're going to get excited about. They were laying 3.5 or 4 points at home in that game and lost by 9. So situational betting, still very important. And in particular, if you're somebody who, you know, hasn't been paying too much attention to college basketball yet because you've been doing college football and all that, look for these situational spots, man. They're not always going to win, but they're good starting points for a handicap. And when they do come through, it certainly feels really, really good.
Yeah, I guess it should when you're talking American East basketball. I mean, folks, ladies and gentlemen, you got to put your hands together. He's talking Super Bowl. He's talking Super Bowl props. He's already working on his Major League Baseball guide, and he's diving into the American East basketball on a nightly basis, and he's hosting a daily radio show, and he's married. He's got a new house. Forget tipping the cap. I mean, I start genuflecting at this point.
Well, thank you for that. You can't see me blushing, but I promise you that I am. All right. So this weekend, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit there before I hijacked the segment to pat myself on the back and hurt one of my rotator cuffs. But, you know, you said this weekend, I mean, look, it's just the Pro Bowl. You know, college football is done, long gone. NFL still a week away from the Super Bowl. What do you think is going to be one of your big takeaways here from this weekend?
I think that this will be, like I just briefly mentioned, this will be the time where you maybe pay a premium. When you get a very, I would say, I mean, I don't know if ignorant is the right word here. But, yeah, I mean, I'll say ignorant, you know, betting market as far as the public jumping in here. And I think there's going to be a game where I think there's going to be one side this weekend. Doesn't mean it's going to win or not, but I am going to fade it. I think Baylor at Florida will be one of the squarest picks of the entire year, that being on the new number one team, Baylor. So what will happen is, very generically speaking, this very, you know, public people that have been following it are going to see a number one Baylor team laying a extremely short number against an unranked Florida team. And I got to think they're going to think that's got to be so easy. Baylor -1, 1.5, 2 against a team that's not even ranked. I got the number one team in the country. That's easy. Give me Baylor. And I just think that's going to be one of the biggest square picks of the entire season, because people haven't been following it, and they're going to see. And it already fits the narrative that I like to bet on. You know, whenever you have that unranked team, you know, a short number, or the fact that they're favored over a ranked team, I usually think there's value on the unranked team. To me, I think it sets up perfectly with it being, you know, the primetime ESPN game and whatnot. I'm going to be on the Gators. I'll fade the number one team in the country. Florida beats Baylor outright.
Yeah, I like that. And again, you know, a lot of people getting into the market here, as I've talked about a few times on previous shows, they want to bet teams that they feel are trustworthy, the teams with a number next to their name, their ranked teams. You know, those blue bloods that they feel like are good year in and year out. Some of those teams aren't that good this year. We talked about that on last week's segment. This week, I think you do see a lot of that. I think you see a lot of public money on the ranked teams in spots where maybe they don't deserve it. on the big name teams that aren't playing very well for, you know, any number of reasons, people are just going to play them because, oh, I know that name. I remember that team. They were really good last year. Well, yeah, maybe they lost, you know, 60% of their scoring from last year. Maybe that's why they're not very good this year. I think this weekend is definitely going to be one of those weekends where you do get some of that inflation from an ill-informed betting public.
Yep, and then I think it only gets worse from this point forward because, I mean, only one football game left, and then people just starting in February, building up to the crescendo, which is March Madness. This is when you start paying premium, at least on public teams. So, and you know, people are going to jump in, ooh, Kansas. And they're, you know, they're not going to think, oh, they got three suspended players, so Kansas's number will probably be a couple points shorter than what it should be. And people are going to look to bet the Jayhawks this weekend, for example, because they know Kansas and they know Kansas has been pretty good this year. And, you know, they can't remember, but they've been in the news here recently. So I'm not saying you can't win playing on those teams. Just know fully well that you're going to start paying a premium from this point forward.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. If you're a VIP client, well, you're probably going to see a Florida play here this week. And if you're not, well, you got a free play from him in that Baylor versus Florida game. But what else is happening over at the website right now, man?
That's an excellent throw. And that's why, I mean, you're just only getting better as a professional broadcaster. So what else is happening? I'll just briefly mention it. Football newsletter for next year, $79. It's an early bird price. NFL college, it's 55% for the last 5 years combined in college football and the NFL. $79 early bird price. If you're looking for college hoops, daily updates, $199 through the championship, go to bradpowersports.com.
And as always, you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. And if we don't talk to you again next week, we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
There you go. There's Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. And of course, you can always find him on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this Thursday edition of the program. That is with John Ryan at John Ryan Sports and the number 1 on Twitter. New contributor to bangthebook.com. John, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. How about you, Adam?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always. First of all, welcome to the show. I know this is your maiden voyage here on Bang the Book Radio, so we're definitely happy to have you and happy to have you over at bangthebook.com as well. You do some great work for us over on the college basketball side. We're going to talk a lot of NBA here on John's segment today, but before we do that, we might as well get to know John Ryan, get to know a little bit about his work, how he got started in this business. So, John, the floor is yours. Whatever you want to tell us about your background.
Well, that's dangerous giving me all that that power. But anyway, I'll start with several decades ago, actually. It's going on about 25 now. I was working on Wall Street. My last position was a chief currency strategist, and we had done probably the initial neural networks for price pattern recognition in the marketplace. So what we would do is come up with the pattern that was existing today and then have our computers go back into history and match it up and using that as a precedent for what was going to happen next. And worked with institutional clients only, you know, like Harvard Endowment Fund, Fiduciary Trust, Asian Development Bank, companies like that. So it worked out really well. And I was also in charge of our crude oil, heating oil, and unleaded gas operations, which we did apply to that. And we were fortunate enough to have Leon Hess as a client, a very down-to-earth man. I can't say enough good things about him. But it was through that relationship and our head trader on the floor and one of our meetings that I was running. And he said, you know, John, why don't you take this stuff and apply it to sports? And I remember this conversation like it was yesterday because it's impacted my life so much and why I'm here with you today. And my reply to him was, what are you nuts? This is a coin flip. Sports, you're not going to find anything in sports. Well, he kept, you know, nudging me, and I finally started digging into it. And then there was that day where I said, you know, wow, there is stuff out there. And this was in the mid to late 90s, the birth of the internet. And I researched the handicap industry at the time. And as we all know, unfortunately, there was a lot of TV shows on back then that said, you know, we have inside locker room information. You can bet your mortgage on this, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just all hype. And I was really kind of surprised that, you know, people were gravitating towards this and were depending on it and actually believing it. So I thought, well, why don't I just start a site and see what happens with it? And maybe I can show people a fun, disciplined way to be betting and not wreck your life in the process. So now that foundation principle of mine has carried me all the way to the 25th, now in my 26th year. And it's been great.
Well, and it's one of those things too, you know, we talk about this a lot on the show that, you know, you do want to treat this in a lot of ways like a market, you know, looking to buy low, sell high, sort of looking at trend lines for different teams, trying to evaluate, you know, what that means and what that means to their, you know, quote unquote prices out there in the marketplace. And you know, obviously you've got that background with your financial background, but also too, you know, you've got a lot of that predictive analysis, the different modeling skills to sort of figure out, you know, where, which directions teams are trending if their prices are in line with the directions that they're trending. So it seems like it was a pretty natural transition over to it for you.
Yeah, and I still am involved with the markets, you know, personally. But, you know, the one, I guess, pet peeve I can share with everybody is, I'm a pretty laid-back guy, but I get really annoyed when the major networks start saying, well, let's see what Vegas is predicting. And they're referencing the line. And what Vegas is doing is not making a prediction on the game. They're putting out a price tag that will have equal buyers and sellers on both sides of it. Just like when the market opens up in the morning at 9:30 in New York, they're trying to find an equilibrium price for Apple Computer and thousands of other stocks where they'll have equal buyers and sellers at least to start the day. And that I can't emphasize that more for especially people that are listening that perhaps are new bettors, since now we have it legal in I guess 20 some states. So that's I think an important thing to start out with right away.
So here's a question I have for you here. You know, again, you said you got your start. This is your 26th year of doing this. So obviously a lot has changed in the business. You just referenced, you know, we've got 20 states now that have betting, probably going to have another 10 or so here in 2020 that adopt legislation, probably, you know, maybe 10 or so more after that. So, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe we may be up to 40 states or so over the next 2 or 3 years. But outside of that, which has been obviously a very fundamental change to sports betting in the United States, how has the market changed? How has it adapted from when you started to where it is now?
Well, I think it's a lot more efficient now than ever before because of technology. We have more games on the board. You may remember not too long ago, we used to have in college football, there would be the add-ons, which were the minor conferences that occasionally would have a betting line. Now, there's names that crop up that I'm sure people have never even heard of, especially in college basketball. And those lines are very efficient. And like I said, they have a price tag where they anticipate what human betting behavior is going to do. So, you know, take it to the Super Bowl. We're sitting at 1.5 right now. That's not a prediction that Kansas City is going to win the game. And it's not a prediction that they're going to win by one. Just as a total at 54.5 doesn't mean that the final score is going to be 28-27 Chiefs, but it implies that, and it reflects what they anticipate to be the human behavior on the game. So, you know, back to the college basketball, I think that's where the strides have been the greatest because of the massive number of games on a Wednesday or especially a Saturday. You have 353 Division I programs. It's very tough without the use of a computer to go through even 5 of those games and have some credible knowledge about the matchups. So I think that's where things have really changed.
Now, as a general rule, John, for you as a handicapper, I mean, are you analytically driven? You know, or are you sort of just kind of looking to buy low and sell high? What is sort of, you know, your process, your strategy really across the board, but maybe say, you know, more of a focus on the NBA?
In the NBA, it's a I'll call it contrarian for the most part. And what I mean by that is I want to be more times than not on the book side of the game. And what that means is that if there's 70% of the bets being placed on, say, Cleveland tonight and 30% on Washington, and I'm just throwing those numbers out, I'm sure those are not what the numbers are right now. But if that was the case and my analytical work was matching up with Washington, that would be a good sign that there might be a play. So I don't want to be following the herd. And I learned this actually with the markets. By analogy, your tops in the marketplace are always made when everybody's bullish. There's not a care in the world. We're going up to, you know, 40,000 in the Dow. And those tops occur when everything just seems to be perfect. At the bottoms is a direct opposite. It's a carnage. If you tell your buddy you're buying stock, they look at you like, you know, you're smoking crack. And then the same thing occurs in sports. It's remarkable to me that it's the same ideas. So when we do get situations, you know, I hate jumping off the NBA here, but the total in the Super Bowl is overwhelmingly on the over. You know, people are lining up to bet the over. And that's a red flag. And sure, you look at both teams and you think, how in the world did they not score like 70 points? But for whatever reason in this world, and there's a lot of smart people in this world, when we're all thinking the one side, there's a tendency that that doesn't come in the reality of the game result. So if that number, for example, keeps climbing a little bit more and the betting percentages are 75% or higher on the over, if my analytics say under, I will have a play on the under. And it works the same way in the NBA.
Okay, so in terms of your analytics and what you're talking about with the NBA, I mean, which stats do you prioritize the most? I mean, I don't know if you've got, you know, models and spreadsheets, things of that sort, but you know, which stats do you sort of rely on the most for your handicap in the NBA, you know, or really college basketball for that matter?
No, the main one is assist to turnover ratio. I have found that to be a very predictive tool in combination with other parameters. So there's this fancy word called combinatorial algorithms, and that fancy word means that I have a program that's taking, you know, upwards of 80 to 100 different game measures and finding a cocktail of, say, 2, 3, 5, or 6 of them that have provided optimal results both in the short and the long term. So this season, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And especially in the NBA, because we did have that era led by the Miami Heat and Pat Riley, where, you know, scores were, some teams weren't even scoring 60 points back then because of that defensive presence that Miami had. We've now evolved into an offense-oriented league with totals that have been much, much higher than in any season that I can remember. Consistently higher. Almost like the All-Star game would have been lined several years ago. So that causes the parameters to adjust in their combinations and use. But the assist to turnover ratio has always been the main one. And it's simple, you know, by itself, if you have a team that has won the assist to turnover ratio, meaning that they had more assists than turnovers than the team that they were playing, there's a high degree of probability that that team's going to go on to win the game and cover the spread.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I know a lot of people like to talk about rebounding as a big one because, you know, there are extra possessions involved with that. And I think a high correlation with assist to turnover ratio does make a lot of sense. I mean, you know, you can't score without the basketball if you're turning it over. And if it's assists, you know, it's a made shot. So that's one that I, you know, haven't heard too many people mention, but it does make sense that there's a very high correlation between assist to turnover ratio and, you know, success, cover rate, things of that sort. And I would think in particular too, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it illustrates both a team's offense and the opposition's defense, because again, you know, if they're able to force turnovers, get those extra possessions, they certainly increase their margin for error.
That I agree 100%. I think in comparing the NBA to college basketball, the scoring variance from top to bottom is far greater in college than it is in the NBA. So in college, the second most important parameter is what you just said, the defensive rebounding. Because a team, if you look at a team that's going into a road game playing a team that's ranked higher than them, or they're higher in the conference standings, and they're looking to upset them, the number one focus is going to be not to turn the ball over, obviously, but then to limit the second chance scoring opportunities by the opponent. And I found that to minimize those opportunities of the opponent to really drive home the chances of a win. The challenge comes with the math, being able to correctly predict those situations.
So I guess a follow-up question to that would be then, you know, when you talk about the two different sports betting markets, I mean, are these things accurately priced into the number? You know, do you feel like that you mentioned the efficiency of the market earlier on, based on the statistics that you use, you know, does the all-encompassing picture generally line up to the spread?
No. And that's why I think I have the competitive advantage. Because like I said, more times than not, I'm going to be the contrarian. So if I put out a play on a team like a Fordham, who doesn't win all that often, but they're still pretty good within their conference teams. The replies I would get would be that they don't have a chance against that opponent. But those are the times where it looks like it's, like to me, if I look at it and I say, you know, boy, that doesn't look like a really good play. That's almost a sign that it is, if that makes any sense at all. What I think what happens in the marketplace is that teams get on runs. Look at Ohio State, for example, in the Big Ten. They were ranked number two in the country in December and got walloped at Happy Valley this past Saturday and dropped out of the top 25. Now, that's a team that I'm looking to become a buyer on because the talent is still there. It's still the same coach, but they're in the Big Ten. And the Big Ten has only had 10 road conference wins among their teams. And I always like this trivia question, Adam. Name the teams in the Big Ten Conference, and I haven't had anybody yet name 11, 12, 13, or 14 of them. They stop at 10. But there's actually 14 teams in that conference, and they're all very good. So they're right now, that Big Ten Conference is a war. Every single game is not an easy one for the favorites.
So here's something I'm kind of curious about. We'll sort of, you know, take all of the stuff that you've talked about here so far and kind of, you know, morph it into a handicap here. Looking at the three games on the NBA card for Thursday night, you've got the Wizards and Cavs, which you mentioned already. Lakers in Brooklyn, a spotlight game tonight. Also Dallas on the road at Portland. Portland with Damian Lillard coming off of that massive performance on Martin Luther King Day. But let's look specifically at this Lakers and Brooklyn game tonight. Lakers open 6, line coming down, now down to 5 in some places. Walk us through what this handicap looks like to you, whether you look, you know, on the overnight lines or you look the morning, the day of the game. How does your process sort of come together?
What I look at right now is I'm looking at the live lines for the Lakers game. And approximately 64% of the bets are on the Lakers. But as you just said, the line's dropping. So what does that tell us? That tells us that there's actually a lot more money going on Brooklyn. And, you know, I hear about, you know, the so-called smart money and the wise guy money. And I really don't know how to quantify that. I've done some massive tests over the years to try to break that out so that thinking that, boy, if I have the smart money, then, you know, I'll be golden. But that's not necessarily the case. But this is a useful tool that starts my process. And I don't necessarily do it in an exact order every day. But in this case, we're looking at it now. So this is confirming what my models would then say is a play on Brooklyn. So my models are definitely on Brooklyn in this game, which, as I just said a couple minutes ago, makes probably no sense. I mean, after all, we're playing the powerful Lakers, you know, LeBron, AD. Yeah, how in the world is Brooklyn going to beat them? But these are the situations where I actually would not be surprised if Brooklyn actually won this game outright.
So you mentioned that your model falls in line with Brooklyn. I mean, based on all of the data that you're inputting, does it spit out, you know, like a projected final score or at the least, you know, some sort of betting line for the game?
It will, and it gives it in a range. And this is, I guess, an important thing to mention, too, is that, you know, we've all been accustomed to machine learning and deep learning. Those are two subcategories of artificial intelligence. And these three concepts and terms have been around since at least the 1950s. I think a lot of times we see that on TV and we think, oh, wow, you know, this is like, you know, all new stuff. And it really isn't. The new stuff is application to a next generation of the old stuff. So in machine learning, you're looking for an outcome that has a range. So Brooklyn will score between 111 and 118 points tonight. If I was using deep learning methods, it would be targeting a specific number, that there's a 85% probability that Brooklyn scores more than 115 points. So obviously in sports, we don't need to be exact, but we need to create a situation where there's a high probability that they're going to score between 111 and 118 points tonight. And in the past, when they've done that, they're 25-3 against the spread. So you're using a historical precedent to support what the projections are showing for the game. So the math doesn't have any real knowledge of against the spread records. It's not trying to optimize that result. It's trying to optimize how accurate it is in predicting the game's outcome.
So my follow-up question to that point then would be, you know, you have a lot of different thought processes out there when it comes to bankroll management. Some people flat bet. Some people use a fraction of the Kelly criterion. Some people use different betting systems that are out there. What do you do? You know, if you've got a game that's, you know, significantly off, are you going to lever up a little bit and bet some more? Or do you just kind of flat bet and, you know, make plays for the same amount, you know, no matter what the model's spitting out for you?
I actually have clients that do both. I would say 15 years ago, money management was kind of a new term. And I had, you know, 3-star, 5-star, 7-star, 10-star releases. And what I learned over time, and again, through, you know, back testing this stuff, that really what you need is 2 tiers. And I now offer 7-star and 10-star. So the bulk of the plays are 7-star related plays. And then the 10-stars are, I guess, akin to game of the month or game of the year. And I try to stay away from the hype of that because that gets, obviously, that gets people really excited that this play is not going to lose. And on a calendar year, my 10 stars do well. They'll hit, you know, close to 70%. But I emphasize over the course of the season. So many times I'll put it out in the email to the clients that, yeah, just remember that this play is a 10 star and it has a 30% chance of losing. So act accordingly. Because I never wanted to give out advice and then have find out somebody, you know, bet way over their head and it caused something bad to happen in their life, you know. And this is supposed to be fun and entertaining, and it's supposed to be taking your extra cabbage and trying to make more money with it. So I found that the money management, there's two major things I emphasize. Never more than 5% of the bankroll on your max bet. If I'm pushed, I'll say, okay, 7%, but not a dime over it. Weird things happen. I had Oklahoma State. Adam, you got to help me with this one. This is the worst beat I ever had. And it was just last week in college basketball. Who's Oklahoma State playing? Was it Kansas?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up for you here while you're talking.
Yeah, they were, well, the point is that they were an underdog. And with 13 minutes to go, they were up 9 points, and they were getting, I think, 6 or 7. So you think, all right, this is good. This one's going to win, and it's going to win outright. So then I don't usually watch the games. I like watching the condensed versions. So then I get the final score, and they lost by one. And it was the first time I've ever seen a game where the team was covering the spread for 99.5% of the game and failed to cover. So in drawing this into the conversation, that's why it's so important not to step over the number that you put down for yourself. And I think 5% of what you have available to lose is more than enough to have fun. And when it's not fun and you have a situation like Oklahoma State happen, you move on to the next day and you soon forget about it.
One other question I have for you here, and then we'll take a look at the Big East Conference for this weekend, which you also did for us over at bangthebook.com. But, you know, as you mentioned, we're talking about models. We're talking about a lot of math and a lot of analytics. And something that I think is very challenging about this business is the gray area. You know, you've got some people that are very, very hardline metrics-based handicappers, and you have the vast majority of handicappers that look at things like situational spots, travel considerations, maybe a coaching mismatch, something like that. Things that can't necessarily be quantified in a one-game sample. So do you factor that into the handicap, or do you try to stay, you know, largely math-based?
I use everything available, Adam. I like thinking of it as fundamentals or supporting the technicals, which is what we would use in Wall Street. So if the balance sheet of a team looks healthy and the story about the team is healthy, then there's reason to believe if the technicals support it, like the moving averages and relative strength indices support the team, then you have both working in tandem, which is a powerful combination, whether it's in the market or whether it's in sports betting. They're identical.
All right, so let's go ahead.
So in the Big East, a team like the even Villanova, I think, is flying under the radar, if you can believe me saying that. I think they're much better than what they've have shown to date. And they have in recent years been a team that generally peaks in those last 2 to 3 weeks of the season. So that would be a buy situation on a Villanova team to make a big run here at the end of the conference schedule. But this is, you know, the Big East is the third toughest schedule in my rankings, or the third toughest conference, I should say, in my rankings. The Big Ten, and then the Big 12, and then the Big East. And we all know the ACC has really dropped precipitously this year, and it's hard to believe that North Carolina is in last place in that conference. You just never would think in a million years that would happen. But, you know, Villanova at 7-9, against the spread with a 15-3 record, that's attractive to me, because Villanova can now go on a run and they will not become overbought in the marketplace. It's almost like in the public betting scene, and I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, but you know, they look at 15-3 not too often, but a public bettor will look at 7-9 and remember the time they lost with them, and they'll discard them. You know, I lost with Villanova. I'm not going to bet them ever again this season. They screwed me. I'm done with them. But the problem with that is that it then you've missed the opportunity to actually go 3-0 with them. So that's one of the things over the years I've tried to teach people along the way, that, you know, the term I use, you know, no team is out there to take your money. And it's ridiculous to think that way and then absolutely discard the team because you're mad at them. And that's, you know, the one thing I'll bring up too is what I like about my methodology is that it takes away emotion, so that everything is so objective at the end, even though the fundamental analysis is rather subjective. The final result, the final plays I put out are objective. They win, they lose, I move on to the next day. I don't want to use Belichick's name that we're on to next Sunday, but it is that kind of mentality. So in the on the opposite extreme of the Big East, St. John's is outperforming expectations, and that's demonstrated by their 13-4 against the spread record. Adding to that is they were 13-6 under So what does that tell us? That tells us that St. John's is outperforming what the betting public thought they were going to be because they've covered more lines, and their defensive presence in their games has been much better than anticipated. So they're a team that I think you know, a lot of people like to use revert back to the mean. St. John's has been great so far this year, but I think the tail end of this schedule could be very difficult for them to keep this pace up.
Well, over at bangthebook.com, we've got a look from John Ryan on the Big East here for this weekend. Also a look at the Big Ten for this weekend. So I definitely encourage all of our listeners to head on over there to bangthebook.com. Check out John's work. And, of course, make sure you follow John on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one. John, what are people going to find on that Twitter page for you?
Well, I put out trends of games. For example, I'll go into the database and I'll find for example, in the Super Bowl, believe it or not, the team, this is the last 20 years, the team that has the fewer number of wins is 13-3 against the spread. And I just played around with it. I didn't know this until yesterday. So now let's take it one step further now. Is that coincidental? Is that just a stat that I put together a couple parameters and wow, look at that record? Or is there really something behind it? And I'll just briefly describe this one statistical measure I use, which is paramount in my research on the analytical side. And it's called the p-value. And I think we've all probably heard of the z-score, which uses standard deviations and how much a team's points for that game, how many standard deviations were their points scored away from their mean. So if they're averaging 100 points a game, and they score 130, that's a considerable number of standard deviations away from their mean. The p-value actually would say, in our example, my null hypothesis is what they call this, and I'm trying not to get too off the rails here with the terminology, but if my hypothesis is that the team in the Super Bowl with fewer wins will make me money, that's called my null hypothesis. So the p-value will calculate this and confirm or deny that they're related. So in this particular case, it actually confirms to a certain degree, not as strong as I like to see the p-value be, because the closer you are to an exact zero in p-value, the more relevant those parameters mean to one another. So they're, you know, conditional on each other. So fewer wins, win Super Bowl, is the combination. And that's actually an example of combinatorial algorithm. So in that particular case, there is meaning between those two parameters. So that would obviously go on the Chiefs. So the p-value is probably the most important stat that I've worked with over the last 5 years.
Well, again, you can find a lot of great stuff over there, a lot of those trend systems, and a lot of good information in general from John Ryan at John Ryan Sports and the number one on Twitter. And, of course, you can read his work over at bangthebook.com. John, a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me for the first time on the show here, and look forward to chatting with you again.
I appreciate it very much, Adam. Really do. It's great.
There you go. There's John Ryan. Once again, professional handicapper you can find on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one. And, of course, find him over at bangthebook.com as well. Coming up on our Friday edition of the program, I'll do a grab bag segment at the top of the show, talk some spots that I'm looking at here in college basketball and the NBA for this weekend, talk a little bit about some of the Major League Baseball findings that I've had as I've been preparing for my guide. And we'll hear from Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook. For this week's version of the Odds Report, we'll talk what we've seen so far on the Super Bowl and get some of the sharp action for this weekend's UFC event. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.